This is Uncle Bob Young out of character. The following, a critique of pure unreason. It can take a bit of time to absorb a week such as is passing from us now. To someone who survives on a continuous news flow, it has been a week of riches beyond compare. Of course, a mere glance into the eyes of others should be enough to remind news junkies that most normal people can still be shocked and depressed by the daily news offerings. News junkies and pundits live on the errors of society. A truly healthy society would never need our dubious services. Hunt as one might through human history, no such psychologically blessed society has ever graced the planet, and civilization since the beginning has encouraged critics. What arouses Uncle Bob from his digestive torpor was this week's amazing show put on in Washington, mostly on April 13. It began as Janet Reno, Clinton's former AG. The FBI and the CIA suggested that Attorney General Ashcroft's Justice Department had been less than enthusiastic in pursuit of terrorists when taking office. In the week following 9/11, Mr. Ashcroft had even suggested cutting the agency's counterterrorism budgets. What led to this astounding suggestion is not detailed. Perhaps Mr. Ashcroft needs more money and resources in pursuit of nudity and indecency, always deserving of punishment. Mr. Ashcroft's Tuesday appearance left no doubt as to his own stance. Everyone but John Ashcroft is a lying political hack. Thus far, the Attorney General is the only public figure who refused to share his opening remarks prior to his appearance. The reason became obvious when he accused Commissioner Jamie Gorelick, former number two in Ms. Reno's Justice Department, of having been instrumental in helping to create walls between the intel agencies. Parenthetically, this is balderdash. There has been bad blood between the agencies since the days when J. Edgar Hoover and Alan Dulles fought with Congress over budgets. The walls got thicker in the 80s when Reagan appointed William Casey as DCI. Casey, a man with no practical intelligence experience, tried to turn the CIA into a veritable comic book spy operation, even as the FBI was trying to repair its damaged image. Commissioner Gorelick had recused herself from hearings that day because of a potential conflict of interest in interviewing her former boss, and was not present to defend herself. Both Commissioners Slade Gorton and co-chair Thomas Keene, both Republicans, rose to defend Commissioner Gorelick and called Mr. Ashcroft's motives into question, springing an unsubstantiated charge in the midst of a hearing. Ms. Reno, during her testimony, had dared suggest that cooperation between the FBI and CIA had actually improved during her tenure, a point reinforced by both agencies' testimony. Simply not true, according to Mr. Ashcroft. Budget cuts during Terror Watch? Preposterous, cries the AG. Could mistakes ever have been made? Certainly not since the stalwart Mr. Ashcroft assumed control. Mr. Ashcroft also retains the dubious distinction of being the highest-ranking government official, Senator, Republican, Missouri, defeated in open election by a dead man. Elected Senator Mel Carnahan's seat was taken by his wife Jean. Hence, some of Ashcroft's bitterness towards elected officials. His performance as a witness was a perfect example of the current administration's reaction to criticism. One borrowed from social commentator and noted cartoon character Bart Simpson. I didn't do it. A scant few hours later, we were treated to yet another poorly staged, pre-scripted, lackluster press conference featuring our chief executive. Frankly, Mr. Bush looked as though a petulant child had been kept up past their bedtime. He generally seemed impatient, tired, belligerent, and cranky. His opening statement, a speech by any other name, was poorly constructed, rambling, and recycled. It's as though the effort of finding new Western movie cliches for Mr. Bush to spout is finally exceeding the ability of his handlers. At one point, even insisting again that vast quantities of weapons of mass destruction were waiting to be discovered, though he added a couple of qualifiers just in case. Then began the most transparent bit of farce, the so-called press conference. Sitting nearby, often in camera view, were the handlers themselves, led by Andy Card, Condi Rice, and Carl Rove. The president called upon reporters from a floor plan and, in answer to several early questions, did no more than quote his own speech. At no point during the entire 40-plus minute performance did the president answer a question directly. On only two occasions did he even seem fully aware of the questions, and only on the "Have you ever made a mistake?" question did he seem fully engaged, which in this case meant that he was halting and possibly confused. No was the answer. He could recall no mistakes since taking office, whereas this commentator remembers little but mistakes. We were treated to 40-odd minutes of confused and bungled self-promotion, adding ultimately to an hour of cheerleading by 43 of 43 and his incompetent and dangerous policies. It is possible that only Richard Nixon's post-revelation press conferences in 73 and 74 were more pathetic attempts at self-serving historical revisionism. The mention of Nixon is no stretch, by the way. There was Mr. Nixon's astounding paranoia, his personal dishonesty, his contempt for inconvenient constitutional safeguards, his feeling, not generally shared, that simply being president made anything all right. Yet because he was, to some extent, a creation of the weird, creepy, crypto-fascist ultra-right, his ignominious downfall was taken very personally by some. As a result of Gerald Ford's blanket pardon, Nixon was able to go on believing that he'd been driven from office by jealous rivals and political enemies. He never fully understood that his accusers were actually a shocked and outraged nation. Ford did Nixon a disservice by pardoning him. Had he come to trial, his grotesque parody of an administration would have received a public airing, and perhaps our government could have received a much-needed overhaul. Perhaps Nixon could have come to grips with the basic flaw that motivated both he and his backers, their fear of, contempt for, and mistrust of the American people. The next day, of course, Mr. Bush made a blatant appeal to Jewish voters, and more importantly, the religious right, by granting Ariel Sharon tacit permission to violate all previous agreements and retain key strategic settlements in the West Bank. This to the horror of almost all sane observers. Since Mr. Bush's less-than-stellar performance, the spin machine has informed us that it was resolute and forceful. Many of the spinners should be familiar. Dick Cheney, Don Rumsfeld, Henry Kissinger, a member of Rumsfeld's charmingly named Defense Policy Board, as is former Nixonite Ken Edelman. All from Nixon's administration. This is not to mention Chief Justice Rehnquist. Others come from the first great presidential spin machine, the Reagan administration. Many of the current crop of pundits, George Stephanopoulos, Donna Brazile, James Carville, Paul Bergala, etc., are from the Clinton spin machine. But it was the old crop of Nixon-era creatures, utilizing oil connections with President 41 and networking with their neocon compatriots, many of whom had taken Kissinger's advanced foreign policy classes in the 70s, who have done the most to shape our disastrous policies abroad, just as it is Bush, Karl Rove, Andrew Card, and John Ashcroft, who shape our domestic path at home. Will this madness stop? Will George Bush retire to Crawford? Will America have to get used to the stentorian pomposity but relative harmlessness of John Kerry? The simple answer is a sad comment. Sadder that it is borne out by the existence of Britney Spears, Justin Timberlake, Donald Trump, and Regis Philbin. To quote H.L. Mencken, "In my researches, I have never found a case of anyone losing money by underestimating the tastes of the American people." Karl Rove and White House Communications Director Don Bartlett and Bush-Cheney campaign chair Mark Rasko understand that point. Bush-Cheney's seemingly inane, irritating, entirely disingenuous TV commercials are the proof. They are endlessly repetitious and filled with cheap catchphrases, noisy and childish, and it is well known in advertising circles that pitching to the lowest common denominator works. Unless John Kerry can find the dynamism within himself to put on a better show than he has so far, we had best get used to 4 more years of the lowest common denominator, and far, far fewer press conferences. Uncle Bob has been in radio, mostly public, since prehistoric times, and currently produces radio satires out of necessity.